Welcome back to episode 8 of season 2 of the Marvel Bronze Age.
I'm Ed. Ocho.
And I'm Levi.
Why are you saying Ocho?
Ocho.
Oh, Ocho, not Ocho. Ocho. Oh, you're trying to do some like Spanish cowboy thing.
Ocho.
Yes, I am.
Well, that kind of fits in.
Doesn't it? See how I did that?
Yep. And actually it kind of fits in with our word of the show too.
It does.
So, by the way, I'm Ed. Or did I say that?
You did.
I did say
you
that.
Did.
Well, I'm still Ed no matter how many times I say
That's
it.
That's good.
It doesn't change. More importantly, for those of you that are thusly inclined, this is a spoiler show. We will spoil characters and storyline and stuff like that. For books that are roughly 44-ish years old.
Yeah, that's a spoiler right there.
Something like that. Yeah, so I know that's going to make our show very divisive, you know, right from the get-go. But, hey, somebody needs to device or, you know, or nobody devices.
I was just getting around to reading that next week.
Just got to that part of the stack. I understand. I have a stack myself, so it's not quite that long, tall, deep, whatever, but I have one too. Yeah. So this time out, we have lined up Kid Colt Outlaw, issue 144. At this point, Marvel's longest running cowboy book.
Yeehaw, Buckaroo.
And Ringo Kid, issue 2, Marvel's shortest running cowboy book at this point.
Yes, sir.
So, boss. We kind of have both sides of the tenure, I guess it were, there. And
a young buck and an old codger.
Yeah. I guess we'll get into Kid Colt Outlaw first on the cover. Pretty cool cover, I think, as the covers have gone so far. This one is a lot more detailed than a lot of the other covers we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like detailed, like photorealistic, but it's detailed because the setting is very, very fleshed out.
Photo what? Are you talking about them moving pictures?
Yeah, something like that. We've got a it's in a saloon, and we've got a scene of dude, let's see, on the cover, does it say his name? No, the hombre who had sworn I'll kill Kid Colt on sight. So that's all we know who this dude is.
Right, so we'll call him hombre.
Hombre, yes. He's getting ready to draw down on Kid. And so hombre has an action stance. Kid has a he's-not-worried stance. He does have one foot up on the boot rail here at the bar that he's standing at. You notice that? And the artist even drew a spittoon down. And the rest of the bar here is pretty well detailed. We see behind the bartender are bottles. There is a gentleman standing next to hombre who's kind of surprised that hombre's getting ready to throw down with somebody.
Yeah, he's done tossed his drink.
Yeah, no doubt, and he's got a cigarette in his mouth.
Yep.
And Kid, behind Kid Colt, is 2, 4, 5 people, one of which is the bartender, who is on Kid's end of the bar with bar rag in hand from where he's been wiping down the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And behind Kid Colt's head is, I don't know if it's a window or if it's mirrors, but you see people running, like running away because there's about to be a shootout. You've got a female or two here and a couple cowboys running away. You can't really tell if that's a reflection. I suspect that that's a window.
Well, if it is, that means that they're in a basement.
Yeah, I know. Below street level.
Yeah.
Not like a whole floor below, but about like 2/3 of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Guys, I mean like a building story. would be occurring below street level. I mean, I guess that's possible. I don't know. I've never seen it. I don't know if in the Wild West they dug down or not.
Not normally for an entire saloon.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll go with mirror.
Okay.
And then behind the bartender is the eponymous mirror behind the bar, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always – I don't think I've ever seen a Western that had a bar that there wasn't a big mirror behind the bar. I don't think I've ever seen one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, but so all of that is incorporated in this cover, and I think that's pretty cool because it kind of applies to one or more of the stories inside.
Yeah,
there's like five Levi, four or five, something like that.
Yeah, I think it was around there.
So. Nicely detailed cover, but not that, you know, not that hyper realistic kind of cover like you'll get sometimes on modern books. And let me run through some of the creative peoples here. Since I've been speaking of him so much, Mr. Joe Manili did the pencils and inks for that cover. This is Kid Cold Outlaw issue 144 with Sam Rosen doing the letters. And then inside we have Stan Lee and Jack Keller responsible for the first two stories. Doug Wildy penciled and inked the third story, but there's no indication of any other creatorship. Stan Lee and Jack Keller did the fourth story and the fifth story. So they did four of the five in the book.
Hmm.
Stan Lee. I mean, I kind of, or not kind of, but I definitely associate him with Marvel's superheroes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think Stan Lee, well, I mean, the superhero time at Marvel started in like the early 60s, and Stan was with the company before that. And I know that he did Westerns. I know he also did like romance. He probably did some science fiction stories back when Marvel, before they took on the name Marvel, they were called Timely. And during that period is when Jack Kirby. Stan Lee started. He was the cousin, I think, to one of the main owners. So there was kind of the connection there to give the kid a job, mm-hmm. and I think that's kind of how Stan Lee got started. It was one of those kind of things.
And look at him now.
Well, look what he did. I mean, he almost, you could say, created a hobby. He was largely responsible for the continuation of an industry. I mean, you know, just without Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, who was in the news this week, by the way,
right.
His estate was.
Yep, I saw that.
They really created the Marvel superhero universe, which is what is driving a lot of Hollywood. It's starting to drive a lot of television.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Marvel company itself with the comic book. So, mm-hmm. You know, maybe it would be a bit of hyperbole to say without him, comic books wouldn't be around now, mm-hmm. but they certainly wouldn't be like they are.
They wouldn't be what they are. I'll at least give that.
You know, they'd be here, but maybe they wouldn't be as popular. Maybe, I mean, it's hard to say. He was instrumental enough that you can't really overstate, I don't think, his importance to comic books.
No. I don't think you could. And, I mean, it's quite easy to say that a lot of the characters, the comics, the teams that we know now without him, we most likely wouldn't.
Right, but I would suspect that in that vacuum there would be other.
Well, there would have, but would they have been as successful? Would they have been as popular?
I mean, you know, you can say that, yeah, without, it wouldn't be the same. But then after that, it's like, well, you know, there's no way really to tell.
Mm-mm.
you can kind of speculate and get all, you know, all Stan Lee fanboyish and whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like, well, but who knows? So he is that important. He has a big enough place that without him, it's like, well, don't know what it would be like. Which, to me, that's a pretty big spot.
Yeah.
I think my impact on the world as a whole would be significantly less if I were not had not been here. So.
I don't know. You got a pretty big footstep.
Yeah. Har, har. All righty, guys. Let's see. We got five stories here in the Kid Cult. In the first one, we are introduced to Bull Chisholm. Excellent name.
Yes, sir.
Excellent name. And just to give you a little insight into Bull, he describes himself when he first confronts Kid Colt as being meaner than a rattler who sat on a thorn stronger than my name and the fastest gun this side of creation.
Mm-hmm.
That's Bull Chisholm. Now, Kid Colt says that he's louder than a jackal, dumber than a mule, and slower than a three-wheeled stage. So you've got opposing viewpoints there. It's hard to say which is correct. But basically, Bull here starts out, and he's talking some smack. Kid Colt tries to talk him down. He spouts off. Kid Colt puts him down.
Mm-hmm.
Bull draws on him. Kid Colt draws and disarms him. And then walks off. Basically, he throws his pistols down and walks off the stage.
Yeah, he drops the mic and leaves. Yeah,
that's what he does.
Yep.
We see that there were multiple witnesses, but one witness in particular we're interested in because he has been watching Colt to try to determine Colt's tendencies when he does draw. Because his intent, our mysterious stranger, is to call Colt out. And if he knows what to look for, if he knows what Kid Colt's tell is, he'll be able to defeat him in a gunfight, earn his name, earn the name of he being the one who killed Kid Colt, et cetera, which is – I've always been fascinated by this gunfighter – mentality / mythology.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that you ever gain by killing one is word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you ever get. Nobody ever talks about getting their hideout or getting their stash or even taking their horse. All you ever hear is that, well, after I kill you, I'll be able to tell people I killed you.
Sure, but it's reputation, and reputation was more important in the long run to a lot of people than his hideout, his stash, or his horse.
Well, then why don't you just go around saying that?
Because when Kid Colt pops up again, you're a liar.
Well, you just avoid him and you never have to worry about it.
But then you've got, you know, somebody in Dodge City who, you know, knows for a fact Kid Colt's alive. You go to Dodge City, you're a liar there.
Okay, but wouldn't it be easier to kill that guy for saying it than actually to kill Kid Colt?
Yes.
See, that whole thing has just always fascinated me. I don't even know that it was necessarily as true as it has been played up in literature and popular culture. I mean, I know that, you know, the reputation of, say, the James Gang, who my hometown allegedly has had a visit from. So, well, I understand it was a big deal, but...
Well, but, I mean, it's in a comic book. It's true.
As Chef Terry just alluded to, or actually she spoke out loud, like the internet.
Exactly. If it's on the internet, it's true. The internet doesn't lie.
If you can Google it, it's true.
Yep.
All right, so we see, I see and saw before, but neglected to say that the mysterious stranger's name is Jeb Wilkins.
Jeb. That's a good, solid name.
Jeb. Not as good as Chisholm. I like Chisholm.
Well, how about Jeb Chisholm?
Oh, there you go. You can just see the chiseled chin. Mm-hmm. And the, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And the steely gaze.
Absolutely, yes. So we have Jeb, who has moved on to the next town. Does it tell us? No. But in the next town is where he is talking up his impending meet with Kid Colt.
Yeah, the town that he goes to is Hard Case. The town where he saw the shootout with Chisholm is unnamed because the name of the town doesn't matter.
Yeah, there you go. But Hard Case does.
Yeah.
Because Jeb Wilkins is going to put Hard Case on the map.
Exactly.
Gotcha. Meanwhile, Kid Colt is riding to Hard Case.
But apparently the long way.
Well, yeah. Because it's a half hour later than when Jeb got there, and he's still not in town.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, you know, Jeb, he's going to take the valley cutoff and beat him to town by an hour.
Yes, at least.
Which is not the way Kid went. Because I guess he just wanted to take the scenic route.
Well, yeah, there's just multiple ways to get to Hardcase.
Sure.
So the sheriff of Hardcase stops Kid, tells him what's going down. And Kid's like, well, cool, thanks. I guess I'll just continue on my journey and just go around Hardcase instead of going through. Kid is on his way. Is this the story? Kid is on his way to, like, Mexico?
It says across the border.
Okay, there
it,
we go.
It doesn't say if that's, like, out of a territory or into Mexico.
Right.
It just says he basically says by then I'll be over the border.
Right. Okay.
So, but I can't expect, because his motivation is, you know, getting away from the whole gunslinging thing, and I can't expect a gringo in Mexico is going to get away from gunslinging.
No, you wouldn't, not at this time, no.
No. So I'm thinking out of, excuse me, like the Arizona territory or the Texas Republic or something.
Maybe he's going to Canada, yo.
He could be going north. He could be going east too.
True. There's not quite as much gunslinging east.
No.
I don't know that there was as much gunslinging up north.
They had their own Wild West to speak of.
Okay.
But I don't think that it would have been as, shall we say, racially motivated necessarily at the time, because there was a large influx of immigrants, just like there was to the west of the United States, versus going south of the border.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
So, in our discussion, we cannot guess what border they are talking about.
Nope. And without a definitive definition.
Right. Just not enough information given.
Nope.
So, Kid Colt continues on his way. What did I say his name was? Jeb?
Jeb. We'll just go with Jeb because first names are so much easier.
Yes. Jeb just kind of waits and waits. And then finally he's like, well, it doesn't look like Kid Colt's going to show up, so I'm going to go after him. And in one panel here, we see that the sheriff tries to stop him. Kind of a throwaway panel. And fortunately, Jeb doesn't understand why the sheriff tried to do that, so sheriff got away with one there.
Yeah, and it was kind of a weak attempt too. He's like, wait, come back, give him more time. And it's like,
yeah. Wait, yeah, it was, yeah.
What? How do you even know what he's doing? And you could try a little harder than that there, deputy.
Jeb heads off, and we find eventually here that he does catch up to Kid Colt outside of town, which is for Kid Colt. He thought that all he was going to have to do is just skirt around town and continue on his journey, and he was going to avoid this whole mishap. So this meeting up with Jeb is kind of an afterclap for Kid Colt. You know, he thought it was done, but yet it never finished. So
a what?
An afterclap.
Hmm. So this has nothing to do with, never mind.
An afterclap being our word of the show.
Look at that.
So there we go. And that was provided to us by Terry Moore on Facebook. So cool beans. Thank you, Terry. If you listen to the show, you'll hear it. If you don't, I have no idea how you knew to send us a word of the show, but nonetheless.
An unexpected, damaging, or unsettling event following a supposedly closed affair.
There we go.
The clap of after.
Yeah. Sounds like something you need a shot for.
It is, actually, or a rubber mallet. And
yeah,
and
no, it's a shot. Yeah, a shot.
Okay.
So, Jeb tells Kid Colt, you know, stops him and tells him what he's up to. And ultimately, he loses, and he loses in a big way. Not only does Kid outshoot him, but he shoots Jeb's pistols off of his belt.
Now, that is shooting, my friend.
So, the last panel we have of Jeb is him riding his horse back into town rather dejectedly with several of the town's folk laughing at him.
Yeah, and it was pretty sad. It really was. I mean, it's one thing, you know, oh, I got the gun shot out of my hands like Kid does, you know. Oh,
right.
He was a faster draw than me and I lost, like Kid does. But he shot his guns and holsters both right off dude's belt before he had time to even draw.
Yeah, that's pretty. And according to the panel before, he had his hands on the pistol, on the butt of the pistols,
mm-hmm.
ready to draw them. Colt hadn't even grasped them yet.
Nope.
So that shows you how blindingly fast Kid Colt can be when he wants to be.
Yep.
And Jeb's outfit kind of puts me in mind of the oldest son on Ponderosa. Adam?
I didn't really watch the show, so...
Was that his name, Adam? He used to, I think, like to dress all in black.
With the red accents?
Yeah, did he have red accents, or was it just black? It was just black, so...
He reminds me of a... oh, I'm going to screw this word up bad, so I got to think. Hold on. Gaucho?
Okay.
An
Argentinian cowboy?
Well, I think it's Spanish.
Okay.
I mean, Spanish language in nature.
I have associated gaucho with South American.
Yes, but
I don't know if they call them that over in Spain or not.
Well, I was thinking that they also use the term in Mexico as well. I could be wrong.
Okay.
But it would make sense given that it's the American Southwest, the Wild West, that the look at least, you know, transfers, but I could be really screwing up the use of that word.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Could be some kind of like cultural bleed over because of the proximity of the two, mm-hmm. Particularly if gauchos were Mexican, were words used for Mexican cowboys. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Pancho Villa is the only word for Mexican cowboy I know of. That's
wow.
That's the only one I've ever run across.
And that's our cultural sensitivity lesson for the evening, folks.
Well, and that comes by way of Willie Nelson, because we know that didn't Pancho kill Lefty or?
Man, I don't know.
Something. Oh, okay.
You're getting in a whole other genre of meh.
Poncho and Lefty, that's a Willie Nelson song.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
Alrighty, next story, Kid Colt.
If it doesn't have at least 160 beats a minute, I don't know what the song is.
Oh, okay. And lots of electronica?
Yeah.
Well, Michael Bublé doesn't have electronica.
No, but that's more her thing, not mine.
Oh, I was going to say, that's probably less than 160 beats a minute.
Yeah, way less.
Okay. All right. Next story, Kid Colt is in a bank, not to rob it, but we're not sure what he's doing. couple guys come in who do want to rob it. And Kid Colt ultimately gets the drop on him using a bag of gold. Let's see here. They give him the bag of gold from the robbery to pack outside. They actually at gunpoint want him to transport their illegal booty. And Kid, using the bag of gold, disarms them, gets the draw on them. But at that point, the sheriff shows up and assumes because of the situation that Kid Colt was responsible. Plus, he's aware that Kid Colt, at the very least in the past, has been wanted, well, if he's not currently still wanted.
Yeah, he is an outlaw. He's still an outlaw.
Yeah, so and sheriff gathers them all up. The two initial bank robbers take the opportunity and start talking as if Kid Colt was in on the plot, making him seem guilty and, you know, further clarifying to the sheriff that he was correct in arresting all three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sheriff takes him to jail. They have some little tits and tats here. They come to blows at one point, but then they seem to settle down. They figure out the pecking order here. Later that night, there's only one person on guard duty. They bluff him out, overtake him, and escape jail. They get out of jail. At the point that they do, the sheriff shows up. They get the drop on the sheriff. Kid Colt still kind of playing along. He's kind of figuring this out as he's going. And they all have their guns back, so Kid Colt's got both of his. Tosses one of them to the sheriff. Disarms one of the men. The sheriff apparently disarms one of the others. This is by firing their pistols. They disarm the bad guys. The sheriff realizes what's going on, that Kid Colt just helped him, so these two guys must be the real bad guys, and Kid Colt is a different kind of bad guy, not this current bank-robbing bad guy. Sheriff turns to thank Kid Colt or to talk to him or to interact with him somehow, finds out that Kid Colt is gone. Last panel we have is Kid galloping off on his horse, looking back over his shoulder at the town with the pale moonlight behind him.
Mm-hmm. Or the sunrise.
Right, sunrise. I guess it could be sunset, too. You don't know. It's just a big hanging orb in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next story I kind of liked more than the Kid Colt stories. Not because I necessarily did dislike Kid Colt, but just the – in this real brief – hit 'em hard kind of storytelling with the five or six pages. This one just interested me more than any of the Kid Colt stories.
Mm, okay.
In this story, this is entitled Lawman, doesn't have Kid Colt in it. Has a, the main dude is a lawyer named Carey. That's his last name.
Yeah, what is it, Walt?
Is it Walt? I forget what his first name is, but he's Mr. Carey here. All kinds of other names, but yeah. And he's a lawyer. Yeah, maybe it is Walt here. He's got a shingle hanging here.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see the first letter, but you see the others. So yeah, we'll go with Walt Carey. He's an attorney in a cowboy town. You know, I don't know, maybe a border town. Out in the West, anyways.
Yeah, it looks more like a ranch town the way they're dressed in this one.
Yeah, and the gist of the story too.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a collection of smaller landowners that go to Walt because they need water rights across Big Bob Brennan's property for their cattle. Big Bob knows this and is not allowing it. I'm sure viewing them as competition and, you know, you squeeze competition enough and there's no competition.
Well, sure.
Walt is, he kind of knows to some extent the reputation of Big Bob Brennan. Apparently, Big Bob is an outlaw type personality. He's known to do whatever needs to be done in order for him to get his way.
Mm-hmm.
But good old Kerry decides to take the case. And Bob Brennan finds out that Walt has taken the case.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brennan has handled this situation several times with other lawyers to his benefit. So he assumes that he's going to go to Kerry and he's going to take care of the situation, as he has in the past, the same way, to the same ends, to his benefit. However, Mr. Kerry decides, or doesn't decide, but Mr. Kerry just tells him, well, you know, I know what you're here to do. You're not going to scare me, and we can settle this in court, ultimately. Something happens here that I didn't quite understand. In the showdown between, not the showdown, but the first meeting between Bob Brennan and Walt in Walt's office, and Bob Brennan has Chig Sweeney with him, by the way, just so that you can keep up with the names, guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's another great name, Chig.
Chig Sweeney, yeah, yep. Yeah. They're talking, and Brennan does something with his gun. I thought he was going to pull it on Walt, but the art just shows this kind of twirly thing in his hand.
Well, he's showing off. He's just pulling it out, twirling
okay,
so, you know, it's you know, a passive-aggressive threat.
Okay. All right. I could see that, I guess. Yeah.
I mean, you know, okay. instead of pulling it out and setting it on the desk in front of him, pointed at him, or
right.
instead of pulling it and pointing it right at his head, you know, dude just is like pulls it out and spinning it, talking. You know, it's different when you get hurt. The law doesn't apply then, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So Walt doesn't bend. Brennan doesn't push the issue anymore, even though he already has his pistol out. Basically, he's giving him some time. He says, we'll come back tomorrow. And we'll fix it then. We have several panels of the townspeople apparently being aware, because they're watching Walt work at night. They're gathered outside watching the sunrise, watching Brennan come back into town, him and Chig and others. And they come into town for whatever may be the reason. When they come into town, Walt is outside. Whether he's there to meet him or he's walking from point A to point B, or we don't know. But here's Walt. Brennan comes up. They walk out into the middle of the street, which is where you always have a gunfight.
Well, yeah, because, you know, you need all the open to shoot people.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And not get shot.
Exactly. I mean, Hiding around corners, that's for lily livers.
Barrels and watering troughs and all that.
Using the front of a wood burning stove as a chest piece.
Yeah, can't do that. That's all illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right. So Walt's talking, and in the conversation they had in his office, Walt said that he would do some things that he had learned, and he learned other things other than lawyering.
Mm.
And when they get out into the street, when Brennan goes to pull, looks like he's pulling his pistol, Walt punches him in the forearm and disarms him, disarms Brennan. Then he follows up with a quick, looks like a straight right to the gut and then an uppercut right that lays Brennan out. And at this point, Walt says, yeah. Some of the other stuff that I learned while I was in college was how to box.
Yeah, I thought that looked like the early boxing style.
Yeah. And we find out here as kind of the follow-up that Brennan did indeed lose the court case.
Mm.
And that, let's see, what do they say here? That the territorial marshal hung around to enforce the decision, but he didn't really have to. Big Bob had been licked by an unarmed man. So he lost a lot of points by losing to Walt the attorney hand-to-hand.
Well, yeah, especially when he had a gun. You know, it would have been, you know, different, I think. He still would have lost a lot of dirt street cred.
Right.
Had, you know, it been just fisticuffs. But, you know, you look at that panel. It's the last one on page 3 of this story. He's got the gun out already. Now, granted, it's pointing up like he's just holding it for whatever reason.
Ah, yeah, you're right. Okay, yeah.
But he's got the gun out. But then you see Walt, like, draw back his hand in a pose like he's almost holding a torch. And then, boom, he hits the, you know, the forearm, like you said, of the gun hand. He does a gut punch, and then he does an uppercut. So Bob had his gun out and lost to this East Coast. And see, that's one of the big things as well. This is an East Coaster. This is a city boy.
Yeah, okay.
And he lost to an East Coast lawyer.
Walt Carey, attorney at law.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hey, that would have made a pretty good 60s black and white Western.
It would have. And you know what? The what is the TV show that's so popular? The SVU, where they've got that music that goes
chink chink.
Yeah.
That yeah.
Yeah, after Walt Carey, attorney at law.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. But it would have to be in black and white.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It would have to be also filmed on a stage.
Oh yeah.
And the night scenes would have to be during the day, just with a neutral density filter to make it look like it's a full moon.
Right, exactly. Right. Right.
But you see,
because I mean, you know, you're not going to have that much money to put into this.
Mm-mm,
so.
Mm-mm, no.
You're going to have to do it on the cheap.
But see, that's how Walt takes care of business.
There you go.
He's fair in the courtroom, but in the streets, he'll knock you out.
Lawyer without a gun.
Yep.
Hey, that's not a bad byline for the show.
No, it's not. Something similar worked for another popular show, but, you know, so.
I don't think it was ever said, though, was it?
I think...
It was like just the case. It was just.
No, I think like in the early episodes, he explained why he didn't have or carry a gun, and it was mentioned a couple times in episodes. You know, I think there was one time, like a big city close by did like an article on him or something, and it was like sheriff without a gun.
Yeah, I remember it coming up in a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. You're right, yeah. Yeah, it was just part of the story, but then they incorporated it and used it.
And because it was such an oddity, you know?
I guess, given where he lived, I can see why it wasn't necessary, though.
Well, but the fact that he's a lawman without a gun.
Okay.
And for those who may not know what we're talking about, this is the Sheriff of Mayberry.
Yeah, yeah, the Andy Griffith Show.
Yep.
Both during and post of Barney Fife.
Yes.
He never did.
No, Barney did.
Yes.
God bless him.
With one bullet in his shirt pocket.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is maybe what Bob here needs to do.
Yeah, for all the good it did him.
You're right.
Alrighty, guys. Let's see. Our next story here shows us Kid Colt sitting in a bar.
Look at that.
Again, with the mirror behind.
I was just going to say, look at that.
With the bartender. Yeah,
and,
yeah, there you go.
And you know what? That bartender looks really similar to the last one. He's balding.
Uh-huh.
He's got the mustache. He's got the bushy eyebrows.
Right. Got a bow tie.
Bow tie. White shirt there.
Yeah. Maybe Kid Colt keeps coming back to the same town to start out with.
Maybe. You know, maybe he's got a little señorita there that he's sweet on.
Could be. So he's here getting a drink, and some roust about starts giving him a hard time, making fun of what he might be drinking. Oh, you know, what do you got there? Milk. Knocks the glass out of his hand.
Why, yes, I've got ulcers.
Yeah, really. We have a little back and forth talk here between the two of them. Let's see. Has this dude said his? Yeah, Blackjack Weems. There it is. The fastest gun in Thunder Rock. So can we assume that that's the name of the town?
Well, yeah, because over on the first opening page, you know, the town, Thunder Rock, the place, Last Chance Saloon.
Okay, I'm sorry.
You know, so yeah, we're at the Last Chance Saloon, drinking milk in the town of Thunder Rock.
And the hombre is Blackjack Weems.
Weems.
Yes. Everyone else in the bar runs out. Gonna be a gunfight.
It's a smart thing to do, man.
Blackjack tries to intimidate Kid Colt by shooting at his feet to make him dance. Kid Colt finally does seem to, but he uses that as an excuse to get moving and apparently grab cover behind an overturn or a table that he overturns.
Mm-hmm. And he spills his milk, though.
Yeah, I see that there. He can get another one.
Well, at least he didn't cry.
No, not over. Yeah, okay. So he's not actually hiding behind the table because he picks the table up and runs at Blackjack and uses it as a battering ram and a shield.
Yes.
Which this is a pretty good table.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it has resisted. Well, we see 1, 2, 3, 4 holes in one panel, so.
And did they even go through?
Well, if they did, they completely missed Kid.
Yeah, so he hits Blackjack, knocks the pistol out of his hand, jumps on Blackjack for a little hand-to-hand. Blackjack has an opportunity and recovers his pistol, pulls down on Kid Colt. Kid Colt disarms him with his pistol, which again, or not again, but Kid Colt's pistol was not drawn. Blackjack had his pistol in hand. Kid Colt was fast enough before Blackjack fired to completely unholster his weapon and fire it, disarming Blackjack.
Mm-hmm.
Just blazingly fast.
Yep.
Blackjack starts begging for his life, in essence, losing just major points in front of the scattered people here in the saloon that did not run at the threat of a gunfight.
Yeah, because there are a lot of people still left in there. You see a lot of people running when it starts, and then at the end, it's like, where the heck did y'all come from?
Well, I mean, if this is the Last Chance Saloon, you would figure it would probably be pretty busy.
Well, yeah, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people there at the in the last panel that are.
Yep.
Still there, maybe? I don't know.
And you've got 5 witnesses, Blackjack, Kid Colt, and the bartender, and they're all dressed differently, which I think is cool.
Yes.
The artist took the time to render each one differently and distinctly.
Well,
and coloring.
Relatively.
So, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you got the white shirt on a number of them.
Right.
With different colored vests. And different hat styles. There is, well, let's hear. Of the 5 gentlemen there, 1, 2, 3 to 4 different hat styles.
Right.
Just of the bystanders there, so.
Yeah. little bit of time on that panel. And then our last Kid Colt story here has Kid Colt riding, looks like he's riding towards a town. And we have a dude, I believe named Steel, who is propped up behind a boulder, takes a shot at Kid with a rifle and shoots his hat off. Kid Colt immediately rolls off his horse, hits the ground, comes up, pistol ready, takes at least one shot, and disarms Steel, shooting the repeating rifle out of his hands.
Yep.
Walks up to him, you know, basically asking him WTF. The guy recognizes the person he was shooting at as Kid Colt, which means he was shooting at him before without knowing who it was, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They have a little story. Now we find out that Steel wants to be a, what does he call him, an owl hoot? I believe just like Kid Colt.
Okay.
And Kid Colt gives him an opportunity to prove that he's good with a gun, and they do the silver dollar trick.
Sure. You know,
toss it up and shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And Kid doesn't just shoot it, but he hits it 2, 4, 6 times, 5 of those within the perimeter of the coin itself. One shot kind of nicks it. Kid Colt is suitably impressed. Starts telling him a story about what it's like to be a. He gives him the 411 on what it's going to be like to be an owl hoot, basically. At one point, to bring how difficult the life is, Kid Colt hears something and grabs Steel and they duck down into the bushes because, you know, there's always somebody out looking for Kid Colt because he's an owl hoot. You can never be too sure what it is, or you can never be too safe. And so he uses that to kind of, you know, bring the lifestyle home to the kid.
Mm-hmm.
Come to find out it's just a rabbit there running through the bush over across the way.
No. You don't understand. It's a jackrabbit. It is a Western jackrabbit.
Pardon me.
No. They are huge. And they are vicious, and they are vorpal.
Do they have great big pointy teeth?
They do.
Okay.
But seriously, they are huge, dude. This isn't like rabbits that we have here where it's like, oh, there's something small. And no, these things are like 2-3 feet like long. And when they go through things, it's like a raccoon or a fox going through things.
Oh, okay.
So my wife had one get into her her troop on exercise one time through basic, and I'd say probably 99, safe to say, percent hadn't seen a rabbit that large, and it ran right into the middle of them.
Okay.
Yeah, that formation lost all cohesion.
So they were kind of confused as to what it was they were facing, eh?
They broke rank.
Ah. Well, at least no one was hurt.
No, luckily it just ran away, but it could have taken someone's head off.
Yeah, but it didn't. That's the important point.
It is the important point.
All right, so Kid Colt continues talking to the dude here. Finally, it gets to where he has convinced young Steel that maybe this course is not the course that he wants to take, particularly this young in life, and have all of the evils and travails of being an owl hoot to look forward to for all of those years. So he takes off, continuing with, you know, his hard life mission on the run kind of thing. And as he mounts up his horse and gets ready to go, Kid Colt asks still, so, you know, you still want to come along. And the kid's like, well, you know, maybe it's better off if I stay here for right now. And we see Kid Colt riding off and says a couple things here in the last panel that kind of round up the story, this one story here. We find out that a lot of the stuff that he was telling the kid wasn't true. And that he thought that there was the chance that he might not have been able to outdraw the kid if it had come to a face-to-face.
Yep, because that kid really did a good job on that silver dollar.
So, there we go. There's our five Kid Colt stories for this episode. Levi, what did you think overall?
Overall, I dug them. Okay. I don't like the multiple stories in one book thing.
Okay.
All right. Because I think that they move too quickly, and they don't really have a lot of story that develops. There's not a lot of depth, and I like seeing depth. I like seeing why things are happening. Though, I gotta admit that with these quick, like, 2-3 page stories, you don't have a lot of the issues that we had issue with last episode, which was the character figured out how to do what? The good guy discovered what, you know?
Right, right.
So you don't have those gaps that aren't filled but are somehow filled.
Right, right. Yeah, but yeah, the story just isn't long enough to do that.
Right. So, I mean, they do a very quick, you know, oh, this happens, this happens, this happens, this happens, it's over.
Yeah, really.
So it's like there's no, wait, how did Kid Colt know how? No, you saw it. He pulled his gun, he shot, done.
Right, yeah, everything is right there.
Yeah. So I like that, but I don't like multiple stories in a comic. I never have. I want a book dedicated to a story, whatever the book is.
Right. Okay.
I have never liked compilations or short stories or things like that. I've never liked them.
Okay.
The whole Western thing, like I said, I dig. I like seeing how they either perceived or wanted to project the perception of the Wild West at that time, the 1970s.
Okay. Right.
So this is a glimpse into one or the other, or maybe even both, that I wasn't able to experience. So I like that. The stories actually weren't bad. They and another, I guess, plus for the short story is, even if you've got a weak storyline, it's over quickly.
Yeah, really. It's not weak for very long.
Exactly. So, but these weren't weak. I mean, they were exciting. They were what a 9-year-old boy would want to read. That's what he was looking forward to. That's what he would go home and pretend. You know, he's Kid Colt and he's in a bar fight. That's all you need. You need 3 pages about a bar fight. And that kid is going to play for another month on the bar fight and how it spread out into the town, or, you know, so that's cool. So overall, I dug it. I give it a thumbs up.
Okay. Definitely a genre that there's not a whole lot of in comic books today.
Mm.
Every now and then, somebody will come out with a Western. Typically, it's going to be a smaller company. And off the top of my head, with a caveat that I'll throw out, I can only think of one book currently being published that I have noticed, and I say that because I acknowledge that I am not cognizant of all comic books.
You mean you're not all-knowing?
No, I can't keep up with them all. But I do know enough to know that Dynamite Entertainment has a Lone Ranger series coming out.
Mm.
Now, the one caveat is that at DC, Jonah Hex was just canceled.
I was just going to ask about that, but I couldn't remember the name.
Yeah, they've had a book since the restart of their universe, which was about three and a half years ago, had a book going since that restart, and it just recently was canceled. Jonah Hex.
I thought. Okay. I'm sorry. I thought I saw something like within the past month where they were doing a restart or they're redoing something. Maybe it was something else.
It could be, and it just could be something that I just haven't run across.
Mm, okay.
And I do know that every now and then these characters like this, Kid Colt, Ringo Kid that we'll talk about here in a second, several other of their cowboy names, let's see, Ghost Rider, I believe they have a Night Ranger character, Red Raven character, some others. They have to publish periodically or they will lose the copyright too. So every now and then, seemingly out of nowhere, you know, there'll be a miniseries, preferably that has all of their cowboy heroes in it together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just take care of it in one fell swoop.
Sure.
They publish it and they put it on the shelf until, you know, however many years they have to do it again to keep the trademark.
Right.
So I know that'll happen, periodically from Marvel, and that is the only consistency for any kind of Western stories that they have now. So given that, usually the only way that you will find Westerns is by smaller companies. Now, you will find a lot of the themes that we would expect in a Western.
Mm.
Will be transported into a different setting, and that's done frequently. Like you'll have there's a series that just started coming out from Image that is a small time sheriff on a backwater planet.
Mm, okay.
So there you have the cowboy in a science fiction motif.
Sort of like Firefly.
Kind of, yeah. Although, yeah, I never understood the draw to Firefly.
That's
all another story. Sometimes I've seen it in World War II, a setting, which is interesting because you would think, well, if they're going to do it in World War II, why don't they just do like mobsters?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, well, I don't know, but they didn't. So, and to a lesser extent, you'll see those motifs in modern day stories, quasi private investigator, quasi noirish, you know, mm-hmm. some of these other elements that. So, but yeah, as far as Westerns, there it's you see far more science fiction comics coming out right now than you do Westerns.
Yeah, yeah, I've noticed a lot of the shall we say not name brand comics. They have a lot of science fiction. And a lot of variants along the science fiction lines.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like for whatever reason, a lot of creators, when they decide, well, you know, I don't want to do capes,
mm-hmm.
they just take that like half sidestep into science fiction.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's not really that far removed from doing superheroes, but.
No, it's not. But I think, you know, they're like, I want to do something other than superheroes.
Yeah, but, basically.
But what will allow me the most creative, like, freedom, you know? And it's like, well, yeah. Science fiction, because, I mean, dude, you can pretty much just make up anything, and, it, you know, that works. Because.
And even still have all the same things. Mm-hmm. You can have people fly.
Yeah.
you can have people do unnatural, unnormal things.
Mm-hmm. You can have magic. You can have
right
freaky science. You can have supernatural. You can have otherworldly.
Yeah, all you have to do is say that it's alien or it's tech.
Yep.
And it's not superheroes.
Yep.
And it's like, well, yeah, okay.
Yep. Instead of an alien from another planet being super strong, well, it's nanites.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So, okay, Ringo Kid.
Hold on. You didn't give us a thumbs, yo.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I didn't. For Kid Colt Outlaw, I am going to give this a thumbs down. And there were more things about the issue that I didn't like than I did. I liked the attorney story.
Mm-hmm.
I did like the quick hit format, but also like you, I didn't like there being five stories in the issue.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to get those two to meet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you can't have 22 to 25 pages of quick hit story.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to get my like of a normal length comic book with a short story. I can't get the two to meet because there is no common ground.
Mm. Well, you got to do it like you do everything else in life. Think about it like a 9-year-old boy.
Well, yeah. That would be cool to have a 9-year-old write 25 pages of Western.
Mm-hmm.
Go.
Yeah. Like, write a story. Write five of them.
It'd be like, no, guy, you still have 18 pages here.
Exactly.
So
the hero wins. Done.
Yeah. Very similar to a lot of the things you liked and didn't like about the book. But overall, I think the dislikes – and it's not like a heavy – nobody should ever read this book. It was a pile of poo kind of dislikes. It's just my dislikes were enough that if I had a stack of books and this was one of the books, it would probably be one of the later books I read in the stack.
Because you know what's inside it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's four or five short stories. You know, there are other things that are longer stories. Maybe they're more in depth.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kind of things that draw me to comic books, not these. First of all, I'm not used to anthology books to begin with in comic books.
Mm-hmm.
They do, you know, you can still find them today. A lot of times they're a lot more experimental. If you find an anthology book, it's by a lot of fringier people using fringier ideas. And I guess the only way to get those ideas published is in shorter format in an anthology.
Yeah.
That's usually the anthologies you find nowadays. And typically I steer away from those because experimental comic books just don't necessarily interest me. I'm more of a traditional kind of consumer.
A traditionalist.
Mm. Yes. Only to a point.
Mm.
Yeah, the short stories, five short – yeah, no, I'll read that later. You know, I'll read Avengers first.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Let's see what Cap is up to. Let's see if the Red Skull made it back or, you know, stuff like that. Oh, Godzilla, what's he do? Is he in New York City this issue?
Mm-hmm.
All that kind of stuff. Cowboy, five-story, three-page story.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll read it, but I'll read it later.
Yeah, you'll read – well – you'll read it on the toilet. It's like when you sit down in your chair and you want a story, it's like, I want a full story.
Yes.
You're going to the bathroom. You got to use the toilet. I'll take five different stories and leave it there because they're quick.
Yeah. It's only going to take a couple minutes. That's really all I need.
Exactly. So that's the length of one of the stories.
Yeah. There you go.
That's bad.
Not that we're attributing BMs to cowboy stories or anything.
No, not at all.
So, Kid Colt Outlaw 144 is a thumbs up from Levi and a thumbs down from me.
Boo.
So now we move to Ringo Kid,
mm-hmm.
Issue 2 from March 1970. The cover is drawn and inked by Joe Manili. with, let's see here, John Severin credited with all, no, not all, all of the internal art and inks except one story that is credited to Bob McCarty for pencils and inks. No information for any other creators. Has anybody ever been able to suss out for this particular book? So they
just didn't say? Like they never said?
It was never said anywhere that anybody's been able to find.
Interesting.
And nobody, also, I mean, nobody like over the years claimed
right.
that they could prove that, well, yeah, I drew that third story in Ringo Kid 2.
Is that common?
For the older books, yes. And the older it gets, the more likely there are to be no credits. So nowadays, everybody gets credited for everything, probably
right.
because of legal reasons. But,
yeah.
You know, but the older the books get, these other little things that you only hear about today either didn't occur then or nobody took credit.
Mm.
And then the major creators started dropping out, like who wrote it, who drew it, who colored it.
Mm.
Those dropped out until you get to a point where apparently nobody takes credit for that at all.
Okay.
So, you know, not necessarily that because they're bad, because, again, at the time they were coming out, they weren't bad. They were par for the course.
Right.
That was, you know, what came out. But just nobody – I think part of it, too, is that it was – truly intended to be disposable, so there's no reason to take credit for anything.
Sure, they really didn't necessarily have the, shall we say, obsession over copyright necessity.
No.
That
I mean,
people do now.
A bunch of kids are going to buy this for 5 cents a piece, and they're going to throw them away. I don't care if they know that I did it or not.
Right.
It's not going to do me any good. You know, mm-hmm. so... And then, yeah, after a while, when copyright and legal issues, people started claiming what was theirs to make a buck, of course. And then, yeah, because actually copyright is a relatively new thing for print, is it not?
I'm uncertain concerning print, but I would have to say that it's you know what? I'm going to say I don't know.
Okay. I want to say that a lot of the earliest copyright indications that I've ever heard come from the 20s.
Well, I mean, you have to look at the fact that decades before that, inventors were getting copyright patents on inventions.
Well, no, yeah, that's true. You're absolutely right. For scientific things, yeah.
Well, not just scientific. For inventions. I mean, it doesn't have to be scientific. It was, well, I found this gear mechanism for, I don't know, it's a steam engine or whatever.
Right.
That's not necessarily scientific. It was just, this was my idea of how to make something better. They got a copyright, patent for it, or at least filed for it.
Right.
And, you know, you're talking about going back to mid-early 19th century that I can, you know, just think of certain things off the top of my head.
Right, right. Well, I guess maybe at that time they didn't consider copywriting their play or their novel.
They may not have. I'm really not familiar with works of writing and how far back the insistence or even the establishment of copyright may go here in the U.S.
Right. Okay. Okay. Let's see. Okay. So that's what we know of the creators of for Ringo Kid here. On the cover, we have an action shot of, I will assume it's Ringo, breaking into a building, knocking a door down in front of him, it looks like. So much action that he has lost his hat.
Mm-hmm.
He's holding a rifle in one hand and looks like something is attached to his left via a wrist strap. And I'm not sure if that is intended to be like a tomahawk or...
No, that's a horse whip. What you're seeing at the end of it is the butt of his gun in a holster.
Right. Okay. So it's just, okay, he's just got a horse whip.
Yeah. He's got a horse whip.
Okay. And it breaks apart here almost. Okay. Mm-hmm. I got you. Breaking into a room, by knocking the doors down, a door down, and the door is falling onto a couple guys with, another person off to the side and a fourth person tied to what appears to be a post here in the foreground, who I guess we can assume Ringo is breaking into this place to rescue.
Or to kill?
Could be or to kill. Although I would say that these guys that are being knocked down by the door are the bad guys just because of the way they're drawn.
Right.
This is an older dude with graying hair and sideburns tied to a post. Oh, he's the captive. He needs to be rescued.
Right.
It's entitled Ringo Crashes Into a Man Trap. Wonder if, like, her name was Stella, or... Oh, no, never mind. Okay.
I don't know. It's just... It's funny, when I read Man Trap, I think something completely different.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, here in West Virginia, you know, you've got the coal mining history. Man Trap means something completely different here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, completely. Than it would have in the Old West if they used it, or in New York in 1970.
Right.
So, either way. It's a very different kind of thing. Story opens with, and actually Man Trap is the initial story here for us. Kid Colt is making his way through a very narrow pass.
Ringo.
Say what, Levi?
Ringo Kid.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What did I say?
Kid Colt.
Yeah, okay. Gotta switch over here.
Though, I do want to mention...
Ringo Kid.
The bad guy who was looking to make a name for himself in the first story of Kid Colt is dressed very similarly to Ringo Kid right now.
Yes, he is. This is absolutely correct, with the black outfit with red highlights.
Yep.
So, yeah, it makes you wonder. Maybe he went on and, well, anyways. Something I thought curious, the path that Ringo is taking is such that he has to do it off of his horse and lead his horse through the path.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure why they decided to write it, draw it that way, but that's what we have here. And at a certain point, Ringo gets lassoed from up above, it looks like, yeah. From up above, and we see a couple
hombre
guys here that were waiting for him, and they're asking Ringo for information to find
his father.
Yeah, Ringo's father. Because the one guy who I guess would be the leader, because he seems to be the one that was done wrong, said that he, referring to Ringo's dad, got us jugged in Tucson, and 5 years don't make us sweet on him.
Yeah.
I have no idea about jugged.
Put in prison.
When I first read it, I thought it was judged.
Right.
But then I looked at it, and it's like, no, that's two G's, so I don't know what jugged is, unless it means the same thing. But we have no indication, do we, Levi, that Ringo's dad is a lawman in this story?
No.
Was anything like – yeah, I didn't think I saw it. So I don't know what jugged means, but that's what Ringo's dad did to these guys, and they're pissed.
Well, now, hold on, and this is something that was a bit of a detractor – for me with this series is the attempt that the writers made in trying to write out accent.
Jargon?
Yeah,
or
accent.
Oh, accent, okay.
So it actually could mean judged, and he's saying judged.
Oh, yeah, with two G's being soft or something.
That makes more sense to me than jugged. though I
he got us judged in Tucson.
Yeah, he got us judged in Tucson.
But, like I said, we don't find any follow-up that his dad was anything.
Mm.
Was a lawman of any sort? Was a judge of any sort? Was a lawyer? Or any of that? So, and off the top of my head, I didn't look it up. I don't know Ringo's background. You know, I don't know if he's like the rich boy that, or, you know, I don't know why he is Ringo Kid at this point. Mm. Maybe that would have helped with this particular story, but I didn't do that.
I believe, and it may be shown in later stories in this one, that Ringo Kid is actually half Native American.
Yes, I do recall that. And keep that in mind, because I'm going to make mention of the horrible name they gave the Indian that appeared in that story.
Yeah, no kidding.
I would not take that as my name.
No.
I would have been like, Dad, come on.
No.
You're kidding me.
Try again.
You know, give me a daughter's name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, yeah, so. So they're trying to get this information out of Ringo as to where his dad is. Ringo's not giving up anything until finally somebody else shoots the pistols out of these two bad guys' hands, disarming them. He comes down out of the rocks where he was hiding, I guess, to some extent, listening. He was overhearing the story. Frees Ringo. And then says, okay, now, you know, it's fair. Ringo is free. He's got his guns. You guys are free. You have your guns. Go ahead and do, you know, whatever you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And they realize that they can't face down, even though there's two of them, they can't face down Ringo Kid. So, you know, he challenges them. He gives them the chest thrust, you know, come on.
Mm.
And basically, they scurry off. We'll get you next time. Very typical bullyish kind of behavior,
yeah,
as it's often portrayed. You know, when confronted, the bully will back down.
Right.
Which, let me say, for all the young kids listening to this podcast, in my experience, that's not what happens.
Not all the time.
The bully will back down, but only after you have taken yours. And have handed them theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Seldom do they just back down because you say, come on. A lot of the bullies do come on.
Mm-hmm.
So just be prepared for that if that's your method of wanting to take care of that situation. The dude turns out to be a marshal. And I don't know if he per se was looking for Ringo. But it is fortuitous that he found Ringo, because the marshal is looking for Ringo's dad. So he is doing the same thing, basically, that the bad guys were doing, only he's doing it from the other side of the badge. And he tells Ringo, you know, however, I'm not going to do anything to you to get that information.
Right.
But hey, if you want to tell me, you know, that's cool. It'll make things easier.
Right, it'll make my job easier.
Yeah, you know, and Ringo's like, well, basically I'll tell you the same thing I told them, and that's like, go away.
Yep. That's my paw.
Yeah. It's my paw, and I'll narc if I want to. No.
Dude.
Never mind. Sorry.
Dude, you're edit that part out.
Oh, okay. You would narc too if it happened to you. No? Okay. But they decide to hang together here for the evening.
Nope.
The little campfire talking here.
Nope. That's him and his dad, dude.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, after he leaves the marshal, he rendezvous with his dad.
Yeah, he meets up with his dad, that night, actually.
Right, yeah, and we find out that the marshal's name is Bulldog Peyton.
Yep.
Well, there you go. There's another. And not only that, but Clune and Geiger were the names of the two outlaws that first lassoed Ringo.
Clune and Geiger. Those are – wow.
Clune and Geiger. No idea if that's first or last. Could be either.
It could be either.
But there we go. So Clune and Geiger, captured Ringo first, but then Bulldog Peyton came along and rescued Ringo.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ringo met up with his dad and told him the whole sordid story. Let's see. We have a page here of the penny in a bottle advertisement. I remember those from my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Small bottle, for those of you that aren't familiar. It's just barely bigger than the penny. And, of course, the thing is,
how did they
get that penny in there?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Never mind there.
So if anyone can guess correctly, we have a special prize for you.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. We can do that.
Yeah.
We'll pick something off the shelf.
Yes.
All right. So Ringo and Daddy Ringo finish up their little conversation here, filling us in, I believe, and then... Yes. Then we cut back to Kloon and Geiger, who are not far away because they have spied...
The Marshal.
I think it's... what did I say his name was? Butch?
Bulldog. Bulldog.
They spied Bulldog, and they're going to set up an ambush for him because they're going to get Bulldog back for... Yeah, whatever, for... Uncapturing Ringo?
Well, interfering in their affairs is what they said, which he had no right to be doing.
Having completely forgot about the fact that they're looking for Ringo's dad. They can do that later.
Well, the fact is that they see him now. So they're like, well, because they told him, you know, whatever his name is, Ringo's dad, he was first on our list, but now you're second. And so now that they see him, they're like, well, we have him now. We'll get him, and then we'll go out.
Oh, okay. So he moved up to first on the list.
Out of convenience, yes.
Because he's there.
Yep.
Okay. All right, so at the same time, Ringo and his dad have decided to split up. Ringo to go keep an eye on the Marshal. Ringo's dad to go search for Kloon and Geiger, whom he finds. And he finds them as they're setting up a trap to get Bulldog.
Kloon and Geiger. Doesn't that sound like a dish? Like a sausage dish?
Could be.
You know, it's like, what are you having tonight? Oh, I'm having the Kloon and Geiger.
Yes, if you say it together,
yeah.
Or if it's two words, Kloon and Geiger, mm-hmm. It sounds like some sort of alcoholic beverage.
Yeah. What are you having? I'm having the Kloon and Geiger.
Yeah, ooh. I'm having a Kloon and Geiger.
That's hardcore right there.
Or yeah, put the words together and it's some kind of Eastern European meat dish.
Mm-hmm. Or like a Kloon and Geiger. Like a potato stew.
Yeah, I'm having Kloon and Geiger.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there we go. And for all of those out there that we may have offended, I apologize for my part in that. I don't know personally any Kloons or Geiger. Well, actually, I do know somebody, Geiger, and I hope he was offended. So I'll take that back.
Is he a counter?
No. No, he was a former boss.
Oh, okay.
So Ringo's dad exposes the trap that Bulldog was about to go into, allowing Bulldog to take into custody one of the duo here, and I don't think anything is said as to which one this is. Yeah, Geiger. And we find out that his first name is Duke, so Geiger's his last name.
So
now we have Kloon and Duke Geiger.
Okay, Duke Geiger.
Duke Geiger. So Duke is basically handed over to Bulldog by the one person in the whole daggone story that doesn't have a name, mm-hmm. and that's Ringo's dad. I don't know if they've given it out yet, but I don't recall it.
I can't remember. I read it today, and I can't remember if they said it or not.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll see it later on here. We'll be able to fill in the blank.
I just like Paul.
Paul?
No, Paul. P-A-W.
Oh, Paul.
Paul.
Okay. Okay, that's what we'll call him.
As in, you know, Nightfall.
Yeah, there you go. Night John Boy. So we got Ringo, who is looking for Clune, but he is overtaken by Paul. And Clune, we see, is kind of distressed because Bulldog hasn't come by him yet. So he's starting to get a little jumpy. Ringo has picked up Clune's trail, so he knows which way he's going. Again, he directs Paw to go watch over Bulldog just in case. And again, they arrive kind of late because Clune has pulled down with his rifle on Bulldog. He's got the drop on him. But just as he fires, Paul runs out there, tackles Bulldog, saves his life. Mm-hmm. Bulldog, you know, thinks he's being attacked, so he kind of defensively reacts to Paul here.
And by the way,
yes,
middle panel, mm-hmm. It's Rand. Paul's name is Rand.
Rand. Okay. There we go, filling in these blanks.
Yep. Like I said, I wasn't sure if they said it, but right there, after Paul, a.k.a. Rand, brings down the marshal off his horse, from his own horse, saving his life from the rifle bullet from the bad guy, the marshal says, "Rand, I never figured you for a man who would stoop to bushwhacking."
Yep, there you go. Okay, Rand, all these names.
Yeah.
Now, that is a plus for me for this book, are the names.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're getting reacquainted here, and they hear gunfire from over the rocks. And the rocks there was where Clune got the drop on Bulldog and had fired that shot. Mm. And soon we see that Ringo is leading Clune at gunpoint down from those rocks to where Bulldog and Rand are, down in the valley or down in the swale or whatever geography you want to put in there.
The wash, the arroyo.
The wash. There's another one. Arroyo.
Arroyo. Yes, okay. Yeah. And I'm betting Rand's last name is McNally.
It could be, which would make Ringo Irish.
McNally, sure.
Irish. So there we go. It's so if he had his own TV show, so would that be Rand McNally of the Clan McNally?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
There can be only one.
One map.
There can be and only one map.
Rand McNally will produce it.
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay, so we finish up here. We see that what are we doing here?
Well, basically because he saved his life and then Ringo brought him in. You know, he's like okay, look, we did you a solid and now I'm even. Kid or Ringo's saying I'm even for the, you know, whole saving his life and cutting him loose from the two guys previous.
Right, right.
And, you know, the marshal's like, well, you mean you did the landslide? And he's like, yep. And so you saved me from – yep. Okay. And for some reason, he's like, we're not square yet, Ringo. I still have some unfinished business. And he walks over to his horse, of course. Of course. Of course. Sorry. Sorry.
I don't get the illusion
there. I know. It's like, what reference is that?
Yeah. Okay.
But because, you know, both Ringo and Rand, okay, basically did a good job, a better job than him, and saved his life. You know, the marshal's like, You know what? They just don't make pouches like they used to. Seems I went and lost that warrant.
Yeah, for Rand.
For Rand. Which, yeah. So, you know, he's like, well, guess I can't take you in this time. And now this whole thing is interesting because when he freed – when the marshal freed Ringo and the two bad guys, you know, went running, scurrying off, you know, Ringo was like, so you only got one warrant? You know, and the marshal's like, that's what I said. Only got one. And now he's like, I seem to have lost it.
Okay. Alrighty. Our next story in the Ringo Kid book, but it doesn't really have anything to do with Ringo, is entitled The Sheriff's Star.
I liked this one.
Yeah, actually I did too, which is funny because it's the non-title character story in this issue, and I like the non-title character story in the Kid Colt book.
Maybe you're just a hater.
It could be.
You need to stop drinking the hater raid, yo.
Sorry. I'll work on that. Not. We start off with the fact that we're in Twin Falls Well.
Yeah, that's right. Twin Falls.
The town of Twin Falls Twin Falls. Twin Falls. Well and faithfully. Okay. Twin Falls. And the sheriff's been shot. He's been bushwhacked, to be more precise, which I imagine means shot from behind.
Yeah. But I wonder.
Taken by surprise and shot.
Who shot the sheriff?
I guess he didn't shoot the deputy.
I'm glad he didn't.
Okay, so we're gathered here today.
It really is one of those episodes, man.
It is. Yep. I mean, you know, when you get those softballs, you just got to take a swing.
Seriously, when the door is open, you have to walk through.
Yeah, I mean, come on. If you know, if you want the highbrow literate podcast, this is not the one for you. Sorry. So.
And here I was hoping.
No. So the townsfolk are gathered, respectfully so, because they all have their hats off and are holding them.
Mm-hmm.
Except maybe the ones that are approaching, and they don't realize what they're approaching yet, or I'm sure they would take their hat off too.
As any respectable man would do at the time.
Yes. As the crowd has gathered overlooking the dead sheriff, discussing the fact that everyone figures that, let's see, that, or is he right here?
I don't. Words help so that I can.
Yeah, the one panel here where this gentleman says, let us pray for the soul of the good sheriff.
Oh, yeah.
But then in the next panel, somebody says, look at Jabez Black acting as if he's sorry. Is that in reference to this dude or somewhere else?
No, that's in reference to this gentleman.
Okay, so Jabez is right there in the group.
Yeah.
And somebody else who's right there in the group is calling him out.
Yep.
Well, that seems kind of foolhardy.
It will be, yes.
Because, I mean, basically dude is saying that the sheriff's dead because Jabez killed him, and Jabez is right there asking for prayers for the sheriff. So it's like, well, if you think you killed the sheriff and you call him out, why would he not just kill you?
Well, that is a good point.
So, and then somebody else follows up and says everyone knows that Jabez is responsible for his death. So there's two of them standing right there eyeballing the dude.
Yep.
And the dude's just like, oh, well,
yep.
I'm a big bad man. Okay, so.
But just really quickly.
Yes.
Since we were talking about names, I think this one takes the best name award for the night.
Jabez. Okay. Jabez Black.
Yep.
And I think in this, he's got a, in the one close-up panel, he's got a black coat over a white shirt, so.
Yeah, but it doesn't turn out to be that. He's got a sort of forest green thing going on. It seems to turn black when they want to do a little bit more shadow and darkness to the character, but normally he's got like this a green gentleman's jacket on.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I see that. So Jabez, probably it's a couple of his men that carry the sheriff off, mm-hmm. because he's talking about how they need to go about finding a new sheriff. And another townsperson speaks up and says, well, you know, isn't that convenient that you be the one responsible for finding a sheriff?
Mm-hmm.
Because then that means that the sheriff will be in your pocket.
Yep.
And finally, Jabez has enough of people putting him down, pulls his sidearm, and shoots this dude in the arm.
Yeah, just right out there in public. Just
yep.
Boom.
I guess that's like Jabez's way of saying shut up.
Yep.
So he moseys on, and then we come back into Twin Falls days or even weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
And we still don't have a sheriff.
No new guy. Because they said, you know, no, what was it? No
honest man dare take the job.
Yeah, that was it. No honest man dare take the job. So, you know, because they know, man, they know. It's like you either be Jabez's stooge or you end up dying.
Right.
So,
and so this is the perfect situation for. And then the stranger came to town.
There it is.
I mean, who else is going to be the solve, because everybody involved is already involved?
Sure, exactly.
So it's got to be a stranger that is the fix.
It's going to have to be someone that, you know, is like, oh, I don't know what's going on here.
And sure enough, because he is described as being shabby, unknown, unhurried, like a saddled tramp seeking a night's lodgings.
Now, I'm still not exact, because that's not the only time that they use that term saddle tramp. But I'm not exactly sure the full connotation of that.
That we'd have to be back in the 50s and 60s at the height of the cowboy mania.
Yeah, or
for sure,
or maybe we could have someone look it up for us.
There we go. If there was anybody listening to us that could look up saddle tramp on the Google machine and see what it says.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So Jabez happens to be out that evening that the stranger rides in, or that day or that afternoon, whenever he rides mm-hmm. in. And he sees him riding in and instantly recognizes him as a stranger. And he has a thought. Jabez says, "Stranger, you looking for a job?" And, of course, the stranger says, "I reckon." Jabez says, talks to him and then introduces him. "Friends, this is our new sheriff, Sheriff Cal Frank." Cal Frank says, "Howdy." And, of course, the townspeople are rather skeptical, because here you go. Jabez has picked the sheriff, the very thing that they said would not be good.
Mm-hmm.
So Jabez says, "Well, come on, everybody. I'll open up the saloon for an extra few hours to celebrate." But Cal says, "Now, hold on there, Jabez." Actually, he says, "Mr. Black," being all respectful and such.
Why, sure, because, you know, he is his employer after all.
Well, a sheriff needs to be respectful.
Sure.
And the sheriff tells him here, says, "Well, according to the law, it ain't legal to open the saloon on a Sunday." And Jabez just thinks he's joking, makes a joke. But then he grabs his pistol and he says, "Now, you know, look here, son. I'm the boss, and what I say is the way that it's going to be." Sheriff says, "Well, you're right, Mr. Black. I understand you are the boss." And Jabez is reassured and continues on towards the saloon to open it and says, "That's more like it." Except the sheriff holds him up short by saying, "Just so long as you don't break the law."
You're the boss, as long as you don't break the law.
There you go. So now the townspeople are kind of looking at each other, thinking, maybe Jabez has run afoul of hiring a straight guy here. And I don't mean straight in the sexual sense, but straight in the good and bad sense before anybody jumps on that. A nomadic cowboy is a saddle tramp.
Well, there you go. See,
according to the Googles. So there we go.
Oh,
does that put your mind at ease about the the usage of that term?
It does. I actually am pretty sure I'm going to be able to sleep tonight, knowing that I know what a saddle tramp is.
Oh, cool, cool.
Well, actually is instead of what I thought it might be.
Right. All right. At this point, Mr. Black realizes that he's not going to intimidate the dude, so he just says, well, you know, you need to just give me that badge and take off, you know, because I've changed my mind. And Sheriff says, well, no, Mr. Black, actually nobody can unsheriff me but the town council. And so, you know, they have a little escalation of words here.
A back and forth, if it were.
Yes, until finally Mr. Black goes to draw on the new sheriff, but the sheriff outdraws him. Doesn't shoot the pistol out of his hand. He shoots him. He's shot and, by all appearances, killed Mr. Black.
Yep.
Which is his right, because Mr. Black pulled on him first.
That's correct.
So, you know, I don't know who is Han and who is Greedo, but that's up for debate.
Mm-hmm.
But here, Mr. Black pulled first, but the sheriff shot him. So
yeah.
And we end with the revelation here by the sheriff.
Yeah.
One of the townspeople says, well, Sheriff, you sound just like Tom Stone, which was the sheriff that was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And sheriff says, well, I should. My real name is Cal Frank Stone. He was my brother.
Yep.
So there you go.
Yep, exactly.
Or actually, that's more like a Twilight Zone almost, or a you know, one of those kind of twists.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't call it a Twilight Zone twist. Because, you know, it's like one of those – because it said days and then weeks later. So that's enough time to get to wherever Frank
right. Was killed.
Well, hold on. My real name is Cal. No, Cal Frank Stone.
Okay. Tom Stone was the sheriff.
Yeah. That's enough time for word to get back to Cal that, you know, well, his brother was killed. And so he goes in, you know, gonna, you know, fix things. So I don't think it's a, you know, like a Twilight Zone twist. But I see more like at the end, like more of a, like a Kill Bill theme music.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
More of like a Tarantino ending music sort of thing going on.
Right.
Though I do have to say in the last panel, they did a really, really poor job in drawing that man's eyes.
Yes.
Because he looks either like he is possessed and going through an exorcism, or he is stoned out of his mind.
Well, he has all whites.
Well, except, but look, there's just the little bit, okay, on the tops of his eyes,
yeah,
of a black, like just little bit of a circle, and it's like the rolling back in his head. It's like, dude,
yeah,
what are you on?
Well, you know, it's in the West. Maybe he's on that peyote.
Peyote
stuff,
yep.
Or chayotes or something like that.
He,
you know, I don't.
He done ate the magic mushroom. Maybe he's chasing the dragon. I don't know.
Could be. Puff. All right, next Ringo Kid story. Ringo is stopped off his horse here. He's getting a drink at a pretty cool little watering hole here, actually.
Yeah, it's very unique.
The water is running down the side of, say, a mountain, and at about knee level, right before it hits the, again, valley, swale, whatever floor here, is a round rock that has been carved out, forming a gathering pool for the water that the water runs down, fills, and then there's an overflow spout that allows the water to continue its course.
Yeah.
And Ringo is here dipping his hat in it, which has just got to be phenomenally nasty.
That's my I was thinking the same thing the entire time I was watching or reading these panels. I was like, oh my god.
You know,
that's really
so
disgusting, and everything that you put into that hat and everything. And, like, you know, I'm thinking, like, oh, you're not supposed to drink seawater because of, you know, the salt level. And I'm thinking, that's what's in that hat.
Oh, man. Well, what else? You know, anytime he's whatever, he just, you know, rolls up, picks his hat on, and puts it on his head.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, he's using a hat to drink water out of this thing, and the horse will have none of it because he tries to give the horse some. And my first thought was, well, heck yeah.
I know, right? It's like, here, drink from this. And the horse is like, no.
Yeah, really?
That is really a smart horse.
So Ringo tries several times, and the horse just will not drink. And finally, Ringo stops trying to get the horse to drink because he starts getting all funky from having drank the water.
And that's because of what was in his hat.
Exactly. From drinking out of your hat, fool.
Yeah.
The horse tried to tell you that wasn't a good idea. He knew.
Yeah, it's like, dude, no, that's funky. That's nasty. Just, like, bring me over to it and I'll drink from that, but ugh.
It's got a nice bowl. You know, it'll be easy for me to get.
Right, and all the nasty will drain out. It'll be fine. Just don't make me drink from your hat, dude.
We find out that the horse's name is Arab.
Yep.
And because Ringo asks for Arab's help as he passes out and falls to the ground.
Actually, in the first story, we saw that he called the horse by name as well.
Did he use the name there, too?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I apologize for not throwing that out there then.
That's okay. Just don't let it happen again.
I'll try not to.
All right.
Minutes later, he wakes up, sees over here to the side is a bag of gold, decides that maybe this is not where I want to be, and he takes off, but someone is there waiting for him. Turns out to be, do they say here? Yes, it is a sheriff.
Sheriff, yeah.
Who is looking for the people that knocked over the San Carlos stage. They've seen the bag of gold, and it must be a bag off of the San Carlos stage.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, from experience, having drank something that knocks you out and waking up to there being a sheriff there, that is one of the most unpleasant ways to wake up.
I could see that.
It is very unsettling.
I could see that. Meanwhile, we we have a couple people here of particular interest to me. At the burial site of Ringo Kid's Comanche Princess Mother.
Comanche Princess.
Yes. The Comanches knighted princesses, or whatever the word. I wasn't aware.
Well, no, they had princesses.
And we see, do they say that this is Rand? Yeah, you are his father. So here's Rand, now that we know his name.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, here is a friend of the family who is Native American.
We're going to assume, of course, that it is. I'm sorry. He is also Comanche.
Okay. I mean, you don't see anything yes or no, but in that Comanche has been dropped already.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so that would make you think that Rand and Ringo must live near Comanche territory, if not in it, right?
Right.
Because they were there enough that Rand settled down somewhat with a female Comanche and had Ringo.
Yeah.
So,
well,
given that, then
I mean,
you could extrapolate that this would probably be a Comanche brave chief, a male Comanche.
Right.
Whatever his rank would be. But of particular interest to me is the fact that this particular Native American's name is Dull Knife.
Yep.
That has to be one of the worst names that I can imagine being given to a brave of any of the Native American nations in our country.
Yep.
Dull Knife. But anyway, that's his name as given by, you know, the creators of this particular story. So we have Rand and Dull Knife talking about having supposed to have met up with Ringo. So I guess Ringo was going to the burial place of his mother.
Yeah, there. What I got was that there was going to be some sort of like personal observance.
Yeah, that's okay. But now Ringo's late. So Rand and Dull Knife, who you would think Dull Knife must be related to Mrs. Rand Ringo. Right? Wouldn't that be pretty safe to say?
That's what I assumed. I assumed like a brother or maybe even a father.
Okay, yeah. I mean,
something like that. I don't think that it was ever clarified at all.
No, I don't remember it being. But I mean, you know, you put all these things together and you're like, well, why would just this person be interested? And why would he be close enough to the family that he would want to help to the extent that he helps in this story?
Right.
If he's not a blood relation.
Yeah, because I mean, I can see like, you know, oh, well, Rand, you saved my life. We are whatever for the rest of our lives.
Right.
Or Ringo, you know, he is like a brother to me and oh, whatever. But, you know, it's just the way they treated Dull Knife.
Yeah.
It made it feel very much like he is related.
Because I would think that any of those other reasons, they would drop it in here. They would say.
Well, but
you know.
Yeah, but then if he is related, wouldn't they do that as well?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, in order to be clear, in order to, you know, draw people in closer to the story, they would say, well, you know, this is Rand's wife's dad. He was there for the observance as well.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, but which I think would be pretty cool if they had done that to definitely signify that here are these two quote-unquote white men, mm-hmm. Rand and Ringo, and they are, although, you know, we know Ringo's not, but they are close enough to this Native American tribe that they kind of, like, hang out together.
Okay. I wouldn't say the tribe. I'd just say, like, if he was the father, he, like you said, he, of course, would have most likely been the one to join them.
Right, right.
And so he would be the one to be there. He would be close to them. I'm not so sure about the tribe itself.
Anybody else? Okay. All right, maybe not. Maybe I'm just being too romantic.
I was going to say, you're just being a romantic. Be a realist.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, be a realist. Well, if I was a realist, I would say Rand needs to just shoot him.
No, that's...
Because isn't that like what the white man did?
No, that's a different artist.
Oh, okay. Or if he didn't shoot him, he gave him a smallpox-infected blanket for his family.
Dude, are you...
Here,
are
stay
you,
warm at night.
Are you trying to piss people off tonight?
No, that's true, they did that.
I'm sorry, but our history books don't say that, so it's not true.
Oh, okay, you're right. And who writes history books? The winners?
Teachers.
The winners always write the history books.
Rich white men in power?
Is it any surprise that it might be kind of skewed in places?
I don't think so. I don't think that they would try and mislead the American populace like that.
Oh, okay. So anyways, all right.
You're a hater.
I am. And that is a rather that's an interesting way to attack an indigenous people. Give them tainted supplies. That's a whole new level of wow.
Mm.
they didn't even do that to the South American, Central American natives when they came over from Europe. They just came over.
I was going to say, but they didn't have to.
Well, okay, but
they made the
pretense of
had it not happened and they had the idea, I'm pretty sure they would have probably done it as well.
Probably.
But they didn't have to because it happened anyway. And I'm betting that maybe that idea was what caused the Blinken catastrophe.
Maybe that was the example that was attempted to be followed there.
You know, someone was like, you know what? They came over and they didn't have natural. Well, what if we were? Oh,
we didn't have anybody in our troop that had smallpox, so we had to go back and yeah. Okay, all right, guys. Enough history lesson here.
That yeah. Okay.
I guess it would be subversive history.
That's false history, man. Because it's not like I said, dude. It's not in the history books.
Okay. Okay. All right, so an hour later, we've got Rand and Dullknife have tracked Arab, Ringo's horse, to a spot here, and it is the spot where Ringo stopped to drink. Rand notices some footsteps that indicate to him that Ringo was ambushed. But Dullknife says, no, it's not, you know, it's not very clear. The boots go this way, and they left on horses. Ringo's horse goes. So Rand says, well, you know, that shows you right there that they got Ringo, grabbed his horse, and they took them all. So we move on now with Rand and Dullknife to the outskirts of San Carlos. Because the trail leads into the town. Ringo is in jail. He's talking to the sheriff or a deputy here. And somebody walks in and gets the drop on the... I'll just call him sheriff.
Well, okay, hold on. Let's take a step back.
Okay.
They're assuming I'm sorry. Dullknife and Ran are assuming that the law has Ringo.
Okay.
And so they follow the tracks back to San Carlos. With that assumption, they're figuring, okay, well, he's going to be in the jail. So they go to the jail. And as it says right here, that night in the San Carlos jail, you know, Ringo is in the jail, and it's got the barred window and everything. And he's thinking to himself, somebody's throwing gravel through the window.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay, I gotcha.
And so, you know, basically, Dullknife is like, it's me. Your father is here too. Now listen, these bars are too strong. Call for the jailer. We'll do the rest.
Right, okay.
And that's when, you know, Ringo's like, hey, jailer, you know, I didn't expect the water to be so bad being in jail. And, you know, the I don't know if he's a deputy or if he's just a guy that they hired. But the jailer's like, basically, dude, give me your cup and I'll get you some decent water. Which allows a person to come in. And basically get the drop on the jailer, well, you know, gun drawn, and he's like, okay, let that guy go.
I gotcha. I follow. So we got and the person looks like Rand.
Well, yes, it does, but I mean
as opposed to Dullknife, so I mean
he had a mask, so I was trying to give the benefit of the doubt, but
yeah.
Dude, it's Rand. Sorry to spoil the comic for everyone out there.
There you go, spoiler.
And again, I say if you haven't read it by now, it's not really a spoiler, guys.
They reverse the situations here. Ringo is out. the jailer is locked in the jail cell, and Rand and Ringo take off. Later, I would assume that day, in the wilds of a nearby mountain,
mm-hmm.
Ringo finishes up as we join the story, telling Rand and Dullknife what happened as far as he could remember. They figure out, they extrapolate to kind of fill in the story that happened outside of Ringo, basically. You know, the story that we read that Ringo might not have been aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Dullknife postulates that the lawmen were chasing the bandits. The bandits saw an opportunity to throw off the lawmen by framing this person, whether they knew it was Ringo or not. So that's what they did. We then cut to the bandits, which is actually the first time we've seen them. They're at a nearby open pit gold mine. And they're getting ready to poison the water to
knock them out so that they can take the gold that's being – or that's about ready to be shipped.
Either where did poison or incapacitate or whatever. They're going to rob these gold miners of a delivery of gold that they have,
mm-hmm.
Via poisoning the water, which the – The miners are going to, you know, drink their fill before going on their long, long trip.
Mm-hmm.
So the bandits do poison the water, but as the miners are starting to fill up their water vessels, their canteens and whatnot, they're shot at, driving them away from the water. So they're saved. And we see that they're saved by Rand, Ringo, and Dullknife, who in turn are shot at by the bandits.
Mm-hmm.
So this starts a small land war here between our two groups. Eventually, through cunning and the keen eye of Ringo, the Ringo-Rand-Dullknife troop supplants the outlaw troop. And once they have them captive, Ringo is explaining to the gold miners what happened. And to prove to them that what he's saying is true, he tells the outlaws to drink the water, which they won't drink,
mm-hmm.
because they know it's been poisoned. Oddly enough, I would think that any amount of poison that they put in the water has probably run past this location by now. But
hey, I don't know, man.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yep.
It's and
one
so,
of those
you know, the,
things.
Yeah, yeah. Suspended belief.
Mm-hmm.
So the gold miners, you know, are cool with and so Ringo Kid saves the day. Final story. Ringo is sitting down trying to enjoy his evening meal of the day, but is bushwhacked by a trio of the bad guys here, shall we say. And this is a lot of talking head development in this story, mm-hmm. as opposed to perhaps some of the other stories, which were more you can see the story by the action, by the art of the panels.
Right.
This is a more sedate story. So the head outlaw and Ringo are talking back and forth, and that's our story primarily in this one. I don't know. Ringo pretty much susses out the situation that these outlaws find themselves in. I guess because he's been in that situation himself. Mm. Who knows? But ultimately, let's see here.
Well, we got three guys that you know he figures out are straight out of the pen.
Right.
And, you know, three guys who have, shall we say, no discernible qualities or really anything to do. They don't have any they can't work, basically. What are they going to do? They're going to go and they're going to hit up Rob Bushwack, the first guy that they meet. Unfortunately, it happens to be Ringo. And so, you know, they're talking, and it's like Ringo's like, I'll bet a peso you three polecats are fresh out of the pen. And, you know, the lead guy's like, right, amigo, fresh out and raging to go. And, you know, so they're wanting to take – and at first, you know, Ringo was like, well, okay, look, guys, you take whatever it is. You're obviously wanting to take stuff from me. You can take my food. You know, my saddlebags are right over there. Go ahead. You know, I got plenty of ammo, plenty of grub. I've even got blankets. Go ahead and take those. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're going to take those. And we're going to take your horse, too. And, you know, they get to talking and everything. And they do. They take all the grub. They take the blankets. They take, you know, the ammo. And I think this, though they don't actually, you know, mention it or show it, but I think personally in the writers' minds, this was that moment where it was like, okay, see, you've crossed the line. They take Arab. Yeah, they take Ringo's okay. Horse.
Right. They take his horse. Okay.
And so, you know, that was I think the point where it was like, you know what? No, I ain't gonna let these boys go now. And so, you know, he tells Arab, you know, he's like, throw him, heave him like a horse fly, right? And, well, Arab does. He throws that lead guy who took his horse right off. And right then, and again, and it's been a common thread I've noticed, that when bad guys approach Ringo or the other good guys, no one ever takes the good guy's guns.
Right, right.
Well, that in you know leaves Ringo with his guns after Arab bucks the bad guy, and so Ringo's able to, you know, draw down and bam, 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 shoots, of course, the guns out of the bad guy's hands. And, you know, he's pretty much like, okay, now that it's my turn and you all don't have guns, you're going to give me everything back. And he's like, now I wonder if it wouldn't be the square thing to do if I left you here, miles from nowhere, like you were going to do me. Which is kind of what he does, you know?
Right.
And he leaves him, and he doesn't – I let me see. I got to check, but I was pretty sure that he takes the horses too.
He says ride on your way.
Oh, okay. No, he takes the guns.
So he takes their guns.
Yeah, that was it. Okay. I knew he took something important. He takes their guns. And one of the things was before then that they were like, you know, we know shooting like that, you've got to be Ringo Kid. And again, I love this. We wouldn't have gotten Henry if we'd have known that, you know, that's who you were. And it's so typical. It's like, it's almost the got caught mentality.
Right. Right.
You know, it's the, I'm not sorry until I'm caught. And it's like, oh, well, we wouldn't have wronged you if we'd known who you are. Well, but had he had no guns and you had all of them and you knew that it was him, you'd have been happy.
Right. Yeah.
So he takes everything of his back. He takes everything of theirs, including their guns, but minus the horses, and he lets them ride away.
Okay. Yeah. He realizes that they're headed towards the closest town, which is called Stampede.
Yep. It's a good
one. But he also knows that Stampede doesn't have the bestest of law arrangements right now.
No.
Because there's a broken sheriff.
Yep.
There at Stampede, and so I imagine that he thinks that because he gets concerned about Stampede, in that he knows these guys are heading there.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they're going to go. I mean, if they're willing to do that, then they're going to go to what he knows, you know, to be a lawless town and raise heck there too.
Right. Yeah. Start up a 20 or 30 year game of poker or something like that.
14 year, but yeah.
14 year. Okay. So now we as the reader, get to Stampede, and we see, you know, through a couple panels here that, yeah, things there are pretty lawless, I guess you would say. It's kind of the outlaw haven, you know, the pirate haven.
Yeah.
Of the Western world.
It's the epitome of what everyone imagines to be the lawless town. You know, you've got guys just shooting up in the air because they want to, riding through the dirt streets because they can, guys, it looks like over here, just duking it out for who knows what reason.
Yeah, just, you know, cats and dogs. Living in sin.
Yep, pretty much.
We go to the next one here is a disreputable gambling den, and we see that the outlaws are talking to one of the big bad guys in town. Mm-hmm. One of the in charge bad guys, I guess. Ringo rides into town, starts asking around town for Hurricane Pardee. I'm assuming, and you find out later, that that's the sheriff's name.
Mm-hmm.
So he's asking around, you know, for the sheriff, or the man that he knew most recently was the sheriff. And he's not getting a whole lot of help. People, you know, don't want to talk. They don't want to talk about the sheriff.
Mm.
You know, so just, again, adding fuel to the fire of how bad things are
right here
in Stampede. Well, through whatever method, Ringo finally does track down the ex-sheriff, I guess, as far as we know.
Technically, at this point, it would be the ex-sheriff.
So, because the old man he encounters ain't wearing a star, and it tells him, you know, that he ain't been doing any sheriff stuff in a long time, and then explains why he stopped being the sheriff.
Mm.
The sheriff ran into a situation with some people. Basically, he lost his nerve.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than, you know, going about things the right way, in my mind, he just quit doing what he was supposed to, and that's kind of just where things stayed.
Yeah, this part of the story was kind of weak.
Yeah. You know, there's any number of things that he could have done were he a good man to, you know, to change this for him, but that's not what he did. He just quit.
Yeah.
and left the situation open, basically.
Yeah.
Says he turned in his resignation and, you know, hasn't looked back, and that's where things stand. Ringo here, you know, gives him a little bit of lip service about, well, you know, somebody needs to do the right thing, and then there's nobody here to protect the town. You know, all the typical things that you would have somebody explain to motivate somebody to do the proper thing.
Right.
The old sheriff, let's see here, Jim Pardee, takes Ringo's words to heart, does some retrospective, you know, he cuts through all the dirt on his soul, and he just realizes that he's wrong, and he needs to do something to atone for what he has not done, for what he's done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes back into town, surprising everybody, because apparently not only did he resign or just quit doing the sheriff, but he just, like, quit interacting, quit going to town, quit everything.
Yeah.
So they're surprised to see him. Figure that something bad's going to happen, you know, because he did represent the law, and nobody is doing that in town, so bad things are going to happen if that's what he's here to do. Mm-hmm. We see that Ringo has gone and visited the judge. We don't see in this panel – well, Ringo does say, thanks, Judge Grady, it might help give an old man his heart back. So you would have to assume that that is referencing something on behalf of Jim Pardee.
Right.
This is a retired judge, Judge Bade. Pardee says that he turned in his resignation papers to a judge. So, you know, I guess putting this together, Ringo has done something about the resignation that Pardee turned in to the judge, mm-hmm. to rescind it, to overturn it, to, you know, something. After their quick little meeting, word has gotten around about Pardee being back in town. Word of that occurring has gotten back to this judge at the same time that Ringo is here. So Ringo knows that Pardee is going into town to do something, and you can only imagine that he's going in to do the right thing, even though it might be too late to do the right thing, at least for Pardee.
Mm-hmm.
But he's there in town, we see, and as he's making his way through town to go talk to
Spur Slocum and Whip Woodward.
Yeah, here we go. Those are, I would imagine, one of those two names is the dude that the Three Outlaws was talking to in the
what did they say,
the bar.
Yeah, but it was a, how did they refer to it? Disreputable gambling den.
Yeah, there we go. That's yes, as are they all. The Pardee, Jim Pardee, is finding that as he's making his way towards where he assumes Spur Slocum and Whip Woodward are, that anyone that is in his way or trying to stop him, trying to waylay him, anything like that, is being shot and potentially killed. They're being eliminated as being a threat to Jim Pardee.
Mm-hmm.
After this has happened a couple times, he starts to operate under the assumption that it must be Ringo that's got his back. He's looking out for him.
Yep, ain't but one pair of guns in the West could do that, and they belong to the Ringo Kid.
We have the quote-unquote final showdown here. Spur and Whip, along with other members of their crew, are out in the main street as Jim Pardee walking down on him with Ringo backing up here. Everybody's shooting, but what is it they say? 30 shots rang out and 30 men died. Patty and the killer had missed each other, but they'd shot the town to – or 30 men fell. Patty and the killer had shot each other, missed each other, but they'd shot the town to hell. Do you know that song?
I do not.
That's a farcical country song by Jim. I forget what his name is.
That would be why I don't know it.
But the Slocum gang is all disarmed. Doesn't look like they were necessarily shot up.
No.
Just disarmed.
Yeah, it looks like he shot. Well, okay. It looks like he shot the guns out of the hands of them, but it's alluded to that Ringo didn't necessarily do that with the bad guys along the streets.
Right, okay.
So it's weird because, like, Ringo is supposed to be just like the other guy. He doesn't kill. He shoots. He's so good he shoots the guns out of the hands.
Right.
You know, you've got these guys that are like, they look like they've been shot. They're falling off a roof and one thing, and they're falling over while dropping a gun in another scene. And it's like, it was misleading a bit, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. I certainly agree with you that it seemed two different methods of handling mm-hmm. the same situation.
Yeah.
After all this, we see that Ringo and Jim are talking. Ringo has the actual resignation letter that Pardee turned in, showing him that it was never accepted.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, he is still sheriff, even though for all these years he didn't do crap as the sheriff.
Right.
Which, yeah, that's comforting.
Mm-hmm.
So you can start to make amends because you still are, even though you haven't done anything with it for who knows how many years.
Exactly.
But there we go. All is forgiven.
Yeah, you're okay.
And thus ends the fourth or fifth story of Ringo Kid in this issue. Whew, 10 cowboy stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yowzer.
Yeah.
So that was Ringo Kid issue 2. Levi, what do you think?
What do I think? These I dug too. I thought these were a little better than the previous five. With the previous five, like I think I mentioned, trying to just understand like what they were trying to write with accent was just really difficult in the previous five.
Right.
And the way they would write a word. Me personally, I had to read some of them like two or three times to get the word and get like the type of accent and the way they were trying to say the word. And so it was difficult. This one was not nearly as bad. Not nearly as bad. And I liked, honestly, these storylines a little more. Even though they were short, and again, I do not like this issue for its short story compilation. I think
right.
that the stories in this one were, for me at least, they were a bit more entertaining. They had, except for the one where, and I think it was what story? No, it was story one. No. It was
the non-Ringo story.
No, I liked the non-Ringo story. It was the brother of the ex-sheriff story.
Yeah, that was the non-Ringo.
Well, anyway, I liked them. I really did.
Okay.
So yeah, overall, I'm going to give it a thumbs up.
Okay.
With and here's the thing, the last one I think really brought it home for the reader because it really was a good story and it was actually a little longer than the others.
Right.
You know, you have like a 5-6 page display of that story where you didn't necessarily have as many as before. And so when you end on a highlight, of course you're going to give the overall book, a positive.
Oh, sure. Yeah, your last impression was that. Mm-hmm. So, I'm gonna give this a thumbs up. A lot of the things though that I didn't like about the Kid Colt, I didn't like about Ringo. But within each of the stories, there were more things that I liked to persuade me to give it an overall thumbs up as opposed to Kid Colt.
Right.
Now, the issues before these or the next issues of these we read, my thumbs up or down may be completely different because it's very fencey as to whether I like them or not.
Mm-hmm.
Again, for all the reasons that we've talked about. Now, something I will mention, it is interesting. I agree with you that this book, Ringo Kid, had a not to put words in your mouth, but for me it had a very different feel, even though there were a lot of similarities with the Kid Colt Outlaw issue.
Okay, yeah, I can see exactly what you mean there, yeah.
Doing research, I found out that both of these books are reprint books. The Ringo Kid book, I believe originally all those stories, both of these books, the stories in each book were together in a previous book for both of them. The Ringo Kid book was written or originally came out in 1958. The Kid Colt book originally came out in 1964. So maybe that explains in some part the difference in feel.
Okay, hold on. Now, the Ringo Kid is the older reprint?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes, it is. So, you know, even though it's only 6 years, you know, you would think, well, you know, things can't be that different in just 6 years. But I don't know.
Well,
you know,
there was. But at that time, 6 years would have been a long time. That was a part of a major transition in American history and culture.
From late 50s to middle 60s, mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, cowboys, lone cowboy by himself, perceived outlaw but with a good heart, mm-hmm. You know, all of these similarities, but yet it's like, no, wow, these stories just had two completely different feels. Even the story in both books that did not contain the title character. Mm-hmm. They felt, you know, so it's like, well, wow, yeah, that's, you know, I definitely would enjoy more stories with the Ringo Kid feel than I would with the Kid Colt feel if I wanted to read many of these.
Yeah, exactly. And see, the reason I asked about Ringo Kid is because the Ringo Kid seems a little bit more serious?
Yeah, it doesn't seem as and I say this with quotes, as cowboy and Indian.
Right, as campy.
As Kid Colt does.
Yeah, and that's why, because when you said that it was older, I was when you said Ringo is older technically, I was like, wow, because I would have thought that the older one, the earlier mid 60s would have been shall we say more advanced and so therefore like more grown up feeling?
Yeah, more like our modern sensibilities.
Yeah, but it
because it's closer in time.
Right.
So, yeah.
But it wasn't.
No.
Huh.
No, not in this particular case it wasn't. And you know, it, to me it's funny that given all those similarities that really when you get to the end of the book, these two books had just really different feels.
Yeah, they did. I blame the hippies.
Damn hippies. All right, guys. I think that is going to wrap up our cowboy talk for this episode.
Yeehaw. Now we're wrapped up.
probably for many episodes to come because next episode we have lined up Sergeant Fury issue 76, which is a World War II book, and Silver Surfer 14, which is a superhero book.
I was just going to say, for Silver Surfer, so, feel free to get out the tissues.
Yeah,
we'll be
really
crying with you.
Boo hoo, my plight.
Yes.
Yeah. So there. Okay. So there we go. There's next time for you, those of you that want to read along. As I said, do want to thank Terry Moore on Facebook for our word of the show.
Absolutely.
Which, again, for those of you coming in late, was after clap.
Oh,
which
okay, after clap. I thought it was the clap.
Was able to mention at the very beginning of the show here 2.5 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
And Levi,
yo.
The mystery quote.
The mystery quote. Well, I do have an announcement. The mystery quote is officially being retired. And the reason being that there really hasn't been much of a response to the mystery quote. And so as obtuse as I can be, I can get hint every once in a while. And, you know, it obviously I'm getting that it just wasn't like anyone's thing. And I get that, and it's fine. We tried it. No big deal. So we're going to retire.
Okay, there we go.
We're going to retire the mystery quote.
Yes, thank you, Elmer.
You're
appreciate
welcome.
That.
And, you know, over the coming weeks, I'm going to think about what, if anything, we can put in that, you know, part of the show. But I'm really not going to force anything.
Okay. Well, we've got the word of the show that we're, mm-hmm. you know, using to try to get audience participation, as it were.
Mm-hmm. And it seems to be working. And, you know, participation is 100% better than the mystery quote. So, you know, we go with what works. And we don't go with what doesn't, and we keep going on with the show.
Okay. Now, if anybody listening does have any ideas that they think could work on the show, as far as getting listeners involved to interact with us, email, tweets, you know, what have you, send those ideas via emails or tweets or what have you, and let us know. And you know, Levi and I'll put it to some thought, and if we can incorporate those ideas into the show, we'll be more than happy to do that, give everything the same amount of consideration, and see what we can come up with. We want, you know, one of the things that stuff like that does is lets me know that people are listening. Now, I know people are listening, but I don't know how many or to what extent, and that's what I'd like to know. Right. We get numbers and all that, and it tells us how many times people download or go to the website or whatever, but that really doesn't tell the story. Now, if you ask a question and somebody sends you an answer, that gives you more information.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's the kind of information we would like to have. You know, I listen to podcasts all the time, and there are those podcasts that I put on and they're background noise, and as soon as the podcast is done, if you ask me, I probably couldn't tell you exactly what they talked about. There are other shows that I listen to more diligently, and I could tell you everything that they talked about. So I realize that there must be other podcast listeners out there that do one or both of those things or anything in between, because I do them. So
I'm betting we're the white noise podcast.
Could be. I don't know. You know, I know that we do have some listeners because they have interacted with us in the past, mm-hmm. and they continue to do so in other forms, likes on Facebook or a Facebook comment,
right,
or stuff like that, you know, rather than anything directly as far as an email or stuff. So I know people listen. So let us know that you listen, guys. You can do that by, let's see, you can send us an email at themarvelbronzeage@gmail.com. The website is bigtimenoise.com/marvelbronzeage, and that's actually, both of those are all one word, separated by slash. We are on Facebook and Google Plus as The Marvel Bronze Age.
Go ahead. Are we going to expand to LO?
As far as what?
Oh, have you not heard about LO?
Yes, actually, I sent off a request to be in their beta.
Oh, you are a... okay.
And I haven't gotten anything back. Yeah, I just did that like Friday, I think, now that you mention that.
Are we going to expand to the new hotness of nothing?
Whatever it takes, man, you know. I have a list of logins and passwords for just about every substantial social network that there's been in the last 3 or 4 years. Because
mm-hmm.
as I hear about them, I'll try them out just to go look and see what it is.
Right.
You know, half of them now are gone.
Yeah.
But every now and then I'll run into my list and I'll be like, oh, hey, I haven't gone to Beswaggle in a while.
Yeah.
Let me go see what that's like. Or, you know, so your accent threw me off. That's what it was.
Hello.
Yeah. And Twitter. We're also on Twitter as Marvel Bronze Age. So actually we get a little bit of traffic there, maybe more traffic there, which a little bit would be more, than any of the other places. Maybe Facebook. Facebook and Twitter seem to be the two big ones. Email and Google Plus, not as much.
Here's an idea throwing out to the listeners. Since we are on Twitter, what would, if you would, what kind of things maybe would you want as a live Twitter feed during a recording? You know, would you like to hear our thoughts as we're saying things, or, I mean, and I'm just throwing it out there, but would you like to hear all the things in my head that I used to make fun of Ed with while we're recording?
There you go. Yeah, live tweeting while we record.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I can do one and a half things at the same time.
Yeah.
So you know, we can live tweet during a recording.
Yeah, that would be interesting. That would be interesting.
And then and you know what would actually be pretty cool is if we were to incorporate some of, say, the response tweets,
right,
into the show.
Yeah.
So if you know if that's something that, you, not no 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 not you, no not you. You yes you. There you go. If that's something you'd be interested in, just let us know.
We could be all hashtaggy and everything.
Absolutely. We'll hashtag like a ninja.
There you go. Like a pizza eating ninja.
Ooh. And be all green and stuff.
There you go.
Ooh, wait. So just real quick. Who put out that comic?
Originally?
I'm sure we'll go with that.
Teenage Mirage.
And currently? Because I know they did a reboot.
There's been several. IDW.
Damn it. Okay.
And actually, in between there, Archie Comics did a volume.
Ew. I don't know.
Now that I think about it.
I don't know that I would want to read that.
IDW, Archie, Mirage. And there might be another company or two that has paid for the licensing and put out some books, but they're not coming to mind. But right now, IDW has it, and they have they've been doing two books. One is a continuation of the original series, and one is a in the recent animated universe. So I think there's like two books going two different universes.
Okay. All right, but yeah, think about the live tweeting, people. It can happen.
How about this? Okay, are you ready?
I don't know if I'm ready.
Have you ever heard of the B movie model named Julie Strain?
Nope.
Okay. Have you heard of the magazine called Heavy Metal?
Yes.
One of the original creators of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles created Heavy Metal after he left Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, cool.
Julie Strain is his wife.
Ah, okay.
So I was trying to get into the same place just through two different methods. But yeah, so one of the dudes who came up with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles went on to create Heavy Metal, which is nothing like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
No, nothing like it at all.
So, although in the original they had no thoughts of it being a kid's thing.
Right.
So the original is more like Heavy Metal than the things subsequent, particularly the Archie, but subsequent volumes. So yeah, that's, you can kind of see if you look that way, you know, if you look from there towards more recent, but if you look towards more recent back, you're like, well, how in the world? So yeah, so there you go. Little bit of trivia for you.
All right.
So
yeah.
All righty, guys. Thanks a lot for playing along in our cowboy hoedown episode here.
Yeehaw.
And we will see you back roughly a fortnight for episode 9, Silver Surfer and Sergeant Fury, back to some more typical Marvel kind of fare. We'll talk to you guys then.
Ciao.
The Marvel Bronze Age podcast is a Teal production, and as such is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Non-Derivatives 3.0 Unported license. The song Super Freaks is provided and performed by the Hammerheads.